This is Norman B's Life Elsewhere, the show about art, media, and culture.
Hello there. Welcome to Life Elsewhere. I'm Norman B. In this edition, a fascinating and puzzling deep dive into one county's electoral behavior. But I'm going to lighten things up a little later in the show. A favorite Life Elsewhere guest, the talented Amy Rigby, will join me to share with you a new single. It's Amy's tribute to the late Tom Petty. Now, I don't want you to miss this. It's a Life Elsewhere exclusive. Amy Rigby with her new single, Tom Petty Karaoke. That's later in the show. First, get comfortable. I have an important conversation for you. Ben Bradley Jr., the award-winning journalist, has a new book, The Forgotten, How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. After the last presidential election, Mr. Bradley was curious to learn why voters in a pivotal county in a crucial swing state came to feel like strangers in their own land, marginalized by flat or falling wages, rapid demographic changes, and a liberal culture that mocks their faith and patriotism. Was this a microcosm of the nation? Ben wanted to learn why a majority of voters there voted for Donald Trump. Ben Bradley, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Life Elsewhere.
Thank you very much.
I've got to tell you, Ben, I was riveted by the first, just the introduction in your book. And when I got to the end of the book, I was searching for words to try and describe to my listeners what this book meant. And I came up with, and just bear with me for a moment, I came up with daunting, ominous. And then I said, fantastical, because there's parts of this book which just read like almost quite like science fiction. It's almost hard to sort of take grasp. So before I go any further, I think you know what I mean when I say that it's fantastical. Can you just give my listeners just a little overview of what your book is about?
Yes, well, first of all, I think the premise of the book is that more than half the country remains shocked that Donald Trump got elected president. This improbable reality star, real estate magnate, coming from nowhere. While he was a celebrity, he certainly had no political experience. And what was so riveting about the 2016 campaign was that this guy said and did things that were so outrageous, they would have knocked any other candidate out of the race immediately. But he had such Teflon, nothing seemed to stop him. And, you know, he steamrolled over 16 other Republican candidates in the primary, softened them up by insulting each of them, warming up to face crooked Hillary Clinton, as he called her. And I just wanted to, I was just fascinated by the phenomenon, which the mainstream media really failed to see coming, and wanted to write about it in a different way. And I discovered this county in northeast Pennsylvania called Luzerne County that I thought would be a good vehicle to tell the story. I focused on the three Rust Belt swing states and wanted to analyze the vote. Those were the three states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which decided the election, as you know. And Trump, in an upset, won those three states by a total of about 77,000 votes out of 13 million cast. And of those states, I think Pennsylvania was the most important, first because it had the most electoral votes, 20. And Hillary Clinton considered this her firewall, perhaps her most important firewall. So that Trump won Pennsylvania was really astonishing.
Yeah.
And looking at the vote in Pennsylvania, I discovered this county, Luzerne, which made up 60% of Trump's victory margin and in the state. So without this one county, he wouldn't have won Pennsylvania or perhaps the presidency, to the extent Pennsylvania's demographics are similar to Michigan and Wisconsin. Now, this is a traditionally Democratic county, hadn't voted for a Republican for president since 1988, Bush Sr., voted for Obama twice, but surged in the other direction for Trump. And you had thousands of Democrats who left the party and to become Republicans to vote for Trump in the primary. And I thought that what happened in this county really illustrated what happened in the entire 2016 election.
Yes, indeed. We're talking to Ben Bradley Jr. His new book is called, it's a must read, it's called The Forgotten: How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. In your investigative reporting for this book, you go into great detail and you talk to some of the people, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But as I got to the end of your book, Ben, I started to think about my take on the election and Donald Trump and the people I'm associated with. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I watch CNN, I watch MSNBC, and I sample Fox every so often just to sort of balance it out. And then I thought to myself, you know, do I live in a bubble? Because some of the things that these people say, some of the people like Kim, like Tiffany, like Ed that you interview, I was kind of taken aback by some of the things that they say, because the things that they're saying really don't affect me in the way that it affected them. Your thoughts about that, Ben?
Well, we have different perspectives. You know, it's a big country. You look at a map of the country by county.
Yeah.
The results of the election, and it's a sea of red with only pockets of blue on either coast. And, you know, I'm from Boston, and that's a real blue bubble.
Right.
And a lot of us do live in bubbles. And I think that, you know, there's plainly a need to understand one another better, I think.
Yes.
You know, we lived in, Trump he seems to behave as president of his base rather than the entire country. On election night when he won, he pledged to try and unite the country, but he hasn't made any attempt to unite the country. He's a divider, not a uniter. And here we are post Brett Kavanaugh, which even further inflamed the country. And I'm hoping that this book might serve as a bridge, if you will, to
yes.
try and unite the country a little.
Yes, because in reading this book, it really opened my eyes up, even though I thought I knew, I thought I understood. But after reading The Forgotten, I think I understand a lot more. Ben Bradley is my guest. As I said just a little bit ago, you go in your reporting, you go in to talk to a lot of these people in Luzerne County. When you started to investigate and start to talk to the different people, was this something that made you sort of pick upon, for instance, Ed or Marty or Lynette? What drove you to those particular people rather than somebody else?
Well, you know, I went down there not knowing the local terrain at all. So at first blush, you do what reporters do. You go to community leaders, radio talk show hosts who have their finger on the pulse, reporters, editors, politicians, other community leaders. And you know, you learn the lay of the land. And I first went there about a month after the election, wanting to see, having read about the county and wanting to see if this would be a good vehicle to tell the story. You know, this is going micro to get macro.
Mm.
A- And the people I talked to initially just gave me lists of names yes. of people that they knew were Trump supporters. And I began interviewing them. And I probably interviewed in depth about 100 people before settling on a dozen.
Yeah.
Whose stories I told in depth, and you know, there was no real scientific basis
right.
For this. I just chose them based on whether I thought they represented different parts of the Trump constituency, and how strong their stories were, and how well they told them.
As you were doing the interviews and you're going through, because you're doing them at different days, at different times, you're hearing different stories. And I'm wondering, Ben, whether you, as you're doing the interviews, as you're collating the information and you're listening to what they have to say, whether each time you're thinking to yourself, I hadn't thought of that, or was this like a big takeaway every time that you spoke to somebody?
You know, I learned a lot. As I said earlier, I come from Boston and Massachusetts, a deep blue state, and I found it really eye-opening to do this deep dive and learn more about how a vast portion of the country thinks, rather than my little cocoon, if you will. And so I learned a lot, and you know they some of these people I would say were perhaps a little bit suspicious of me initially, yeah. You know, wondering, you know, am I a liberal, quote unquote? But you know, I've found as a journalist that first you have to show that you can listen.
Yes.
And show them the respect of being able to listen without judgment. And that people, once you begin to earn their trust, they basically want to tell their stories.
Yes.
And they're flattered to be asked.
There's one person that really caught my attention, and that's Kim, under Trump women. Because I love the fact that you list people as Trump men and Trump women, and then you have the mm-hmm. Democrats. Well, I should just back up and say that a lot of these people were independents or Democrats and had turned to Trump, and we can get into talking about that. But let's just talk about Kim for a moment. She just, there was something about Kim which really, and I'm still trying to sort of figure out what it was that sort of stopped me in my tracks. Maybe you can help me there, because I'm just wondering whether Kim sort of struck you differently to some of the others.
Well, that's funny you mentioned Kim. She, of the 12 characters, she was my wife's favorite character.
Really?
Well.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. She's very unvarnished.
Yes.
You know, has a bit of a mouth, as they say. Isn't afraid to drop four-letter words.
Right.
And she just sort of tells it like it is. She was she's a landlord, the property owner in Wilkes-Barre, which is you know, very economically depressed city. That's the county seat, and she deals sometimes with Section 8 tenants. And I think that she was fed up with all the government services that some of her tenants got and others in society that she feels others didn't get. And, you know, there was also a resentment of against illegal immigrants, which was, you know, Trump's core issue, perhaps. And these are people who, you know, it's a dominantly white county, but with the recent surge in Hispanic immigration into the county, mostly people coming from New York and New Jersey for cheaper housing, and they're mostly Dominicans.
Yes.
And, you know, Trump's people, I think, latched on to his slogan, Make America Great Again. The word again
was
fraught with meaning. because it implied that the country is not great now, but once was. And to them, that was a nostalgic appeal to a sort of a whiter yesteryear that doesn't exist anymore. And now when you look around, the demographics of the community have changed, and there are different people coming in.
Right.
And the area they used to live in and remember with fondness isn't the same. And so I think Kim was one of those who perhaps personified that view.
You know, there's a word that I picked up on that I picked up in reading about Kim as well, and some of the other people that you interviewed, and that's resentments. Resentments and the phrase us and them came up quite a lot. I want to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with Ben Bradley Jr. talking about his book, The Forgotten, right after this.
You're listening to the best show on radio about art, media, and culture. Life Elsewhere with Norman B.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ben Bradley Jr., award-winning journalist, former deputy managing editor at Boston Globe. He oversaw the Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of the Catholic Church sexual abuse scandal. Ben has a brand new book. It's called The Forgotten. This is a must-read. The subtitle is How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. We've been talking about some of the people that Ben interviewed, and one of the things that came up, caught my attention, was the word resentment, and there, for instance, Kim, who we just talked about, the use of the phrase us and them. That really seems to sort of stick out, Ben, about the resentments about paying for other people, working hard. They have no problem with Kim, for instance, has no problem working hard, but she resents somebody else getting something which she sees for nothing. Can you talk about that briefly?
Yeah. Well, I think Trump cultivated and weaponized, if you will, the resentments of his constituency. And, you know, he appealed to what he called the forgotten people, which is what gave me my title,
yes.
The forgotten. These people felt marginalized by flat or falling wages, isolated by a liberal culture that mocked their faith. Their patriotism. They felt that others were cutting in line, if you will, taking too much money from the able-bodied idle. And they felt a loss of dignity.
Yes.
And Trump came along. One of the characters said in the book, Tiffany, that people fall in love with their therapist because they want to be heard without judgment.
Right.
And I think Trump did that.
Yes, yes.
And he made them feel good about themselves, whereas Hillary made them feel ashamed. So they voted for Trump.
They voted for Trump. One of the other things that you point out in your book, and this comes out in a character called Lynette, and that's conflict within families. Let's talk about that.
Well, to me, that was one of the more dramatic parts of the book. This election caused a lot of upheaval between families and friends. And when people gathered for holidays, politics often became a taboo subject. You couldn't talk about it without people getting overwrought. And Lynette Villano, one of the characters in the book, is 72. She's one cannot imagine someone who was more over the moon about Trump than Lynette. And she worked for him. She got elected a delegate to the national convention for him. And after the election, she was just so happy. And she sent a text message to her grandson, who was then a senior at Tulane University on his way to law school there. And she told him how happy she was about Trump's election. And the grandson came back at her ferociously, perhaps a little too ferociously, since this was her grandmother, but his grandmother. But they just got into this fascinating exchange of texts, which she shared with me, and I reprinted in full because I thought it perfectly represented the philosophical divide that exists in the country over Trump. And secondarily, it's sort of a sadness about how a family was torn apart by Trump. And this happened to many other families as well.
You know, you have a photograph in the book, and I think I'm right in saying this. It's a book, a photograph of Lynette wearing a MAGA hat with Trump with his arm around.
With Trump.
Her. Yes, yes.
Yes. I love that photo.
Yes, so do I. Amazing stuff. Let's talk about some of the other people that you've written about, some of the other people that you've interviewed. For you, we've talked about Kim, we've talked about Lynette. Let's now turn to some of the men. I'm thinking about Ed. Talk about Ed.
Ed Harry.
Yes.
Ed Harry was a union organizer for the Wilkes-Barre Labor Council, president of that, and lifelong Democrat. He'd been a union organizer his entire career. He served in Vietnam. He's in his 70s now. And he's one of those who felt that the Democratic Party left him.
Yes.
And there were a lot of those who went over to Trump. They didn't feel that they abandoned the Democratic Party. They felt that the Democratic Party gradually abandoned them, didn't pay enough attention to them anymore, took them for granted. So when, and he especially warmed to Trump's talk about trade and the failure of NAFTA and GATT and jobs going overseas. And he thought that Trump was standing up for his constituency better than the Democrats were. So when his union leadership announced that they were endorsing Hillary, Ed said he'd had enough, and he came out for Trump and was fired.
Yes. There's something else that he says, which I think is really, really curious. He doesn't believe that 9/11, he thinks that there was a conspiracy. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of people in this country who do believe in conspiracies.
Yeah.
And Trump himself was the leader of one.
Yes.
Rose to prominence in the Republican Party by leading the birther movement against Barack Obama.
Yes.
And saying, in the face of all evidence, that he had not been born in this country, which
right.
Certainly he knew had to have been a lie. But there are a lot of people who did believe that, at least in the Republican Party, and who thought that he was a Muslim, Obama. And this kind of thing. And so people who believe in conspiracies are out there. And Ed is one of them.
We're talking to Ben Bradley Jr. And I should add, when I get the publicity blurbs for books, I've sort of avoided saying this, Ben, for a very good reason, because it says Ben Bradley Jr., veteran journalist. And I hate saying veteran journalist because it always makes somebody sound like they're ancient. But but you are a veteran journalist, and we're very thankful for it. The book is called The Forgotten: How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. This is such a fascinating read, and I have to ask you, because this is not in the book, but here we are, one day after the official ceremony to put Mr. Kavanaugh onto the Supreme Court. I'm just wondering, if you were doing this reportage now, what those people in Lucerne County would have made of the debacle over Kavanaugh. Any thoughts on that?
Well, my people, the people in the book, I still stay in touch with them.
Yeah.
And they totally agree with Trump that this was, that the Democrats behaved shamelessly, that they needlessly embarrassed Kavanaugh. Trump said last night at the swearing-in, he apologized again. He politicized the swearing-in ceremony, whereas Kavanaugh himself tried to strike a more unifying tone. But these people are still with Trump, and I have stayed in touch with them. And of the 12 that I feature, 11 say that if the election were to be the 2020 election were to be held tomorrow, they would be enthusiastically voting for Trump again. And only one of the 12 has slipped into the undecided category, he says.
That's so interesting. It's so fascinating. You did all this reporting and talked to all these people. I'm wondering, as it went by, as you're just at the takeaway about Trump himself and the scandals surrounding Trump, not just the sex scandals, but all the multitude of different things. Just the takeaway from talking to the 12. What did you glean from their opinion of the Trump scandals?
This is just what's really interesting about these people and how Trump has created an alternate reality, if you will. You know, he keeps railing against the media, and it's gotten to the point now in this country where we're so polarized, we can't even agree on what facts are anymore. Used to be facts were facts, and you could say so. But as you perhaps know, the Washington Post has been keeping track of Trump's statements since he's become president, and come up with, as of last month, September, more than 5,000 of them. And that's an average of 8 a day. Now, some are perhaps minor, others are more major and could be called outright lies to the extent that these are premeditated. But we have two different realities now. We have Fox News and the Drudge Report, which have incubated two worldviews, one pro-Trump and one anti-Trump. And I think that's a dangerous state of affairs when we, as a society, can't really agree on what facts are. And Trump has been able to convince his base that any story that's critical of him, any scandal, if you will, is fake news.
Yes.
And they believe it. Facts be damned. And I think it raises an important question for the future. Has Trump's election started a real a new conservative movement, or is it based more on a cult of personality?
Yes.
That's a one-off and specific to him.
Yes.
They just love the guy, and in their minds, he can do no wrong.
You said something, Ben, at the very beginning about your book and about the reason for writing The Forgotten, is that the media, the mainstream media, and I hate that phrase, the mainstream media overlooks what you focused in on. And from what you've just said, what you're talking about Fox, we're talking about the other areas of media. And I'm wondering whether the media, the mainstream media, as we call it, is still overlooking the pertinent things, that we're still justifying the fact that Trump is president rather than a cult of personality.
I hate to pile on and I agree with you, I don't like that phrase, the mainstream media either, but I do think it's fair to say that most of the press did not see the Trump phenomenon emerging in 2016, and then it became more of a show and a circus, and people You know, he benefited greatly from his celebrity and the fact that these rallies were so riveting to watch. So they were televised live, and he gained from that. But I don't think reporters at the big newspapers and television networks based in New York, Washington, Los Angeles got out of their offices enough into what is often called flyover country out in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
And talk to these people enough, you know, old fashioned hard leather or hard shoe leather reporting.
Yes. Yes.
And so they became vulnerable to the charge that they were out of touch. And there were also the huge crowds that Trump was drawing at these rallies. And in a lot of places like my county in Pennsylvania, signs everywhere. And the tendency seemed to be to ignore that evidence that was staring us in the face. You know, signs don't vote. People who come to rallies don't necessarily vote, but they did.
But they did, yes, yes. One thing that I'm curious about when you were interviewing the different people in Luzerne County is whether you got into talking about Trump himself, about the image of Trump, about literally the man, the figure of Trump, the crazy hair, the extended tie, you know, those kind of things, the marriages, the not just the scandals, but the known facts about Trump, his bullying, his any of the sort of the real personality of Trump. Did you get into that? And did you get a feeling that people?
Of course.
Yeah, but did you get a feeling that people completely overlooked it?
Well, they were in a mood to send a message and to turn over the tables and break the china.
Yeah.
They knew that this guy was different and perhaps risky, but they were so alienated that they wanted to send a message with their vote and elect someone who was really different.
Yes.
And they knew all about him. And they were willing, you know, you had born-again Christians overlooking his philandering, his affair with porn stars.
Right.
I mean, they didn't care.
Right.
They gave him a pass on all that because they thought that he was the guy who could reboot the Republican Party in his own image and bring them the change that they felt the country needed.
I want to turn the attention now. I want to put the spotlights on Hillary. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Ben Bradley Jr. about Hillary right after this.
You are listening to Life Elsewhere with Norman B. You can learn more about this program at lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O.
My guest is Ben Bradley Jr. His new book is a must-read. It's called The Forgotten, How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. Now, I know from reading the book that Hillary was a very important part of where people's minds were going. But your takeaway, Ben, from just collating all the information, talking to all the people that you interviewed, when you went back and sat at your keyboard, what your takeaway was, the overall opinion of Hillary?
Well, the Trump people couldn't stand Hillary, and that certainly redounded to his benefit. You know, it's mysterious why people have such strong feelings about Hillary. You know, on the face of it, she was, with her resume of First Lady and Secretary of State and Senator, she was one of the most qualified people ever to run for president.
Yeah.
But she had baggage. You know, people perhaps were sick of Bill Clinton. And, you know, there was backlash against the Bushes as well. And people perhaps were tired of legacy candidates, but I think the Trump voters I talked to felt that she was arrogant, elitist, and a snob, really, who looked down upon them and didn't listen to them the way that Trump did. And she made a really serious mistake by calling the Trump people deplorables.
Yes.
And that was so condescending. And they seized upon that. And, you know, as before you knew it, they were wearing I'm a proud deplorable T-shirts.
Right.
So that backfired.
Yeah.
So, yes, she was very unpopular, and that really helped Trump.
So now let me ask you about the other Republican candidates for president. It didn't take very long for Trump to step to the fore, to basically, with his bradicchio, just basically knock all the others off the stage. But your interviews with the people that you talk to in Luzerne County, I know one of them, if I remember correctly, had a thing for Cruz, really likes Cruz. I can't remember. So,
yes.
Yeah. What was your takeaway again about the other Republican candidates and how quickly they dismissed them?
Well, Trump, that showed Trump's power. I mean, he was cruel and demeaned them. He assigned them all these terrible nicknames, you know, Lion Ted Cruz, and what did he say about Bush?
Lazy or slow or tired or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Little so Marco.
And Little Marco, yeah. He would demean each of these candidates ruthlessly.
Yes.
And, you know, while warming up to face who he later called Crooked Hillary. And that's his style to demean. And some of the people I talked to were critical of that, but not really. You know, they admired they thought that Trump fought dirty, but he won.
Yes.
And they admired that he came out on top. I think, you know, people still like a winner in this country. And and I think, you know, his celebrity served him well as a good base, as a good platform from which to spring.
So as you're doing the interviews, it's only a few weeks after the election. You're still in touch with some of these people, as you say. So any feelings about where they think things are now? You've already said that you think some of these people will definitely vote for Trump in 2020. But just as things are going on right now, any feedback that you've received that gives you an idea that anybody is sort of drifting away from Trump?
Not among my hardcore, just one out of the 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Who thinks that I think he's getting a little tired of Trump's bombast. This is one of the men, Vito De Luca.
Oh, yes, yes.
Who's a lawyer in Wilkes-Barre, and he's a thoughtful guy, and you know he was in a mood. You know, he knew what he was getting in Trump. But wanted to take the chance, and but he's one of the few who goes into sort of a detailed critique of Trump's policy positions that he doesn't like, especially on the environment, pulling out of the Paris Accords and trying to bring coal back as an energy source and this kind of thing. But generally, I found that it was not so much the issues that counted with these people. They could disagree with him on a variety of issues, but still just like his style.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it is with most people. Most people don't really vote the issues, in my experience. They vote on their comfort level with the candidate. They have to like him or her before they can vote for him.
Vito, if I remember correctly, is what we would call a classic conservative. I mean, he was a straightforward Republican and sort of, and I got the feeling just from what you wrote about Vito that he was kind of upset with the sort of personality side of Trump. That was really what was getting to him as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that he was not acting presidential,
right?
Which is a fundamental issue, and did become an issue. You know, we've never had a president like Trump,
right?
we've ever had a what would you call that, a blowhard in some respects.
Yes.
Someone who is this bombastic, someone who brags so much, someone who is not trying to unite the country. He's dividing the country, and he's, as I said earlier, paying almost exclusive attention to his base and not trying to broaden his base, which is a curious re-election strategy. But at a time when two of our last three presidents, Trump and George W. Bush, have not won the popular vote,
right,
he's calculating that you don't need to get to 50% anymore to win the presidency. In a country as polarized as this, a plurality will be enough, especially if a third party candidate emerges to divide the vote further over the Libertarians and the Green Party. And they got 5% of the vote,
right,
as it was, which was enough to make the difference.
Yeah. I'm wondering, as you were putting the information together, you're collating all the information, but before you did that, as you set about, you had the idea to go to Lucerne County, you've done your research, and you go to Lucerne County, you do the interviews. Before you set foot in Lucerne County, you must have had some ideas. You as a journalist, as you say, a veteran journalist, you had a thought about what you were going to come up against, what you were going to meet. But after you had did the interviews and you've got all the information, did it change dramatically?
No, it didn't. I mean, I had a hypothesis, having analyzed the vote and looked at this county and seeing how strongly it went from Democrat to Republican and how dominant Trump was in that county, I had an underlying hypothesis which needed to be tested on the ground with more reporting. But I think the hypothesis was largely proven out. Mm. You know, that this guy was one of the most unusual candidates we'd ever seen. That these Democrats thought that the party had left them, and that they were in a mood to make a radical leap.
Yeah.
To Trump, and some of these people had voted for Obama.
Right.
When you think about it, that's quite a leap from
it sure is. Yeah.
Obama to Trump. But as one of the local politicians down there told me, Obama represented hope and change, but Trump represented knock down the door and change.
Mm. I've got to ask you this, Ben, after reading The Forgotten, if you've imagined what would have happened if there hadn't been Trump? I guess I don't want you to have a crystal ball in such respects, but did you have any thoughts about if Trump hadn't been on that stage with all those other candidates, what would have happened?
I would have guessed Marco Rubio.
Really? Yeah.
Younger, new generation. People were probably in the mood to reject Bush as too familiar. We don't want to have a coronation and just give it to another Bush the way perhaps they felt with Hillary. I think they thought Hillary was waiting in the wings to be coronated.
Yes.
And that she felt that this was her divine right and that she hadn't earned it enough. That's my sense.
You know, I hear a lot of Democratic people saying that they liked Kasich, and if Kasich had won, they wouldn't have been so upset. Your thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, perhaps I overlooked Kasich there. He was more moderate, certainly,
yeah.
And but he's he's in danger of becoming extinct, that philosophy, in today's Republican Party. You know, he just wasn't hard right enough for the Republican Party today. Cruz was.
Yes.
Cruz was, and Cruz, I guess, became was closer than anyone else.
Right.
So
I've got one last question for you, and that is, putting the book together, at the end of the day, was it an enjoyable experience?
Oh, very, very. I was just fascinated by Trump, and I couldn't believe, I guess, as I said at the outset, that this guy got elected president. He was such an unusual candidate, and again, did and said things that no other candidate could get away with. And I was looking for just a different angle into the story, and think that I found it in by trying to use this one county as a prism to tell the story. But it was very enjoyable. It was very educational, learning about these Trump voters who elected the most unusual president we've ever had. And I think hopefully it's can serve as a vehicle for both sides to understand one another better.
Well, whilst we're talking about enjoyment, I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking to Ben Bradley Jr. The book is called The Forgotten: How the People of One Pennsylvania County Elected Donald Trump and Changed America. And I know I've said this a number of times throughout the interview. This is seriously a must read. Ben Bradley, thank you so very much for joining us at Life Elsewhere.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your interest. Bye-bye.
Still to come in the show, we take things a little lighter by chatting with the one and only Amy Rigby about her new single. It's her tribute to Tom Petty. I'll talk with Amy Rigby right after this.
We love to hear what you have to say. Write to this address, info@lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O.
One of our favorite guests to have on the program is a musician, an artist, a writer, a talent, and I should add, just a lovely person, also married to another lovely person. Amy Rigby is with us. Amy, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, Norman. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about why we're talking to you, because you have a new song out. I'm not going to give the title yet. I'm going to let you do a little introduction to it. So let's find out what's going on with Amy Rigby and a new song that you've written.
Well, I miss Tom Petty a lot, like everybody does. He's been gone a year, and I think, I don't know, it was such a shock that he, after the triumph of that tour and the Hollywood Bowl concerts, and then he was gone, And so, I think about him a lot, as I did before. I used to, I always kind of felt like he was on my shoulder, like a guardian angel, kind of. I think a lot of musicians probably felt that way about him. If you knew anything about him and the Heartbreakers and just all the hard work, I mean, he just, put his heart and soul and his whole life into making music. And anyway, so I have thought about him a lot. And then I was asked to get up and sing American Girl with Chuck Prophet and the Mission Express. They were doing a gig in Rochester, and Reckless Eric and I just happened to be there in town that night. And so, got to rock out on a Tom Petty song. And then the next day, when we got back home, I saw this video of Jay Maskus, this artist who, he had a band called Dinosaur Jr.
Sure.
And And it was just this very humble cell phone video of him singing a Tom Petty song in a nearly empty karaoke bar. And he wasn't performing. He was just, it was almost like prayer. They had titled the YouTube video, it was just called Tom Petty Karaoke. And it just, you know, that title kind of grabbed me. And I even, as I will sometimes do, I Googled it right away, like, surely someone's written, this is already a song, Tom Petty Karaoke. But it hadn't been written. And I just thought, you know, I just sat down and wrote this song about singing Tom Petty songs and how they you know, just lift you up. And it wasn't anything I could have planned or designed. I just really went with the moment, and I think it turned out really well. I felt so excited about it that I wanted to get it out, like, right away, because I think of October as Tom Petty month.
Yes. Yes.
He passed away in October, and he was born in October.
You sent it to me just a couple of days ago, and immediately I heard it and played it for my producer, and we said, oh, we got to talk to Amy about this. So here we are. Before we go any further, let's play Tom Petty Karaoke from Amy Rigby right here at Life Elsewhere.
Nothing feels right, nothing feels right. I'm going out on my own. Can't stay home, no, I can't stay home. When I'm holding the microphone, it's like I'm holding on to something that's gone. When I sing,
yes, there we are. Amy Rigby, with lots and lots of references there. Tom Petty karaoke, she calls that. And I'm guessing, and I don't know for sure, Amy, that Mr. Reckless Eric was the producer on that.
Yes, absolutely. I wrote the song upstairs in my little office, and Eric was down in the studio, as he usually is, either working on some of his own music or usually like dismantling an amplifier or screwing, screwing a couple pieces of wood together. So I came down and I said, I wrote this song. I think I could play it for you, and maybe I just wanted to record it right away. Usually I will write a song and want to go like, well, I go play some gigs and play it for people. But I didn't have any shows coming up. So, I just kind of wanted to like get it going somehow. And so, the next, I played it for him, and then I ran upstairs and like finished, a few lyrics. And then we got a drummer to come in the next day and just like played the arrangement that is there. Yeah. We just played it live.
We've run out of time, unfortunately, Amy. So please give a hug and a big hi to Eric. Look forward to seeing you.
I will.
Next time I'm in your neighborhood, as always, we'll stop in and say hi. We have been talking to the lovely Amy Rigby. Her new single is called Tom Petty Karaoke. We'll have a link up on the Life Elsewhere site. Amy, thank you for joining us at Life Elsewhere.
Thanks a lot, Norman.
Well, another 60 minutes has elapsed, and I thank you for listening, and a very big thank you to our guests. If you'd like to hear this edition of Life Elsewhere again, well, you got a lot of options. You can go to MPR1, iTunes, Mixcloud, and you can also check out our affiliates, all listed at lifeelsewhere.co. Now, your feedback is important. Keep the emails coming in. Let me know what you think of the show. I'm still answering a massive amount of feedback on my interview with Colin Moulding of XTC fame. I promise I'll get to you. The nice lady in a moment will give you the email address. Till next time, be well, be good, and always be nice.
You have been listening to Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B. Life Elsewhere is written and produced by Norman B. Guest booking and additional research by Stephanie Lane. Behind the scenes assistance by James Van, Bruce Goodman, and Allison Klein. We love to hear what you think about Life Elsewhere. Send your questions, queries, and comments to info@lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O. Life Elsewhere is produced at the studios of WMNF Tampa.